Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you with me. Lots to cover, so let's cram 3 hours into 30 minutes, shall we? Here we go. Listen, debt. Debt is a problem for a lot of people. It's a challenge. People have a lot of misconceptions. People have a lot of emotions wrapped around and inside of their debt. And so we're going to try to unravel it, untangle it, try to sort it out a little bit. And there are lots of different thoughts on how to manage debt. And we were able to find, Beth in my office was able to find a great guest for us to dig into this subject with a little different perspective. So I think you're going to like this. Let me introduce to you Leslie Tain is our guest. She's a highly respected consumer and business debt related attorney and an advisor and founder of Tain Law Group. She's one of the few New York State attorneys concentrating solely in debt resolution and also alternatives to filing bankruptcy for consumers, small business owners, and professionals. She's been recognized as an industry leader. Her achievements include being selected for Long Island Business News Leadership and Law Awards. Several other, I have a whole list here of achievements. We're super happy to have her with us. And the website, lifeanddebtbook.com. And the book, very convenient, Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness. And it is a matter of life and debt, isn't it, Leslie?
It sure is, because debt is part of life.
There you have it. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And why is that? Is it just because of the access to different things require the use of debt, or is it a desire to spend more than we make? Is it a leveraging tool financially? Why do you think that it is such a part of our society?
Well, you're right. It is actually a combination of the three, but more so the fact that in our society, we need to have debt in order to get things. We need debt in order to purchase a home, generally, to purchase a car, for day-to-day expenses. People live with debt. To go to school, you need debt. So under those circumstances, the majority of the people in this country these days have debt. That debt is manageable or unmanageable. And that gets us into where you're spending that money and where the debt is in your life.
Okay, well, that's a huge thing, because a lot of people look, some people have a philosophy of no debt, all debt is bad. Then on the opposite extreme, you know, if you can hold on a little longer and live on somebody else's money and die owing everybody and check out where you, then you've beat the game. I mean, there's a lot of different thoughts. And I have to confess, I love, Leslie, your top 10 timely life and debt tips. So I asked Leslie's permission, ladies and gentlemen, we could do this a little bit order. I want to go to those because they're so compelling that I think our listeners will get a lot out of them. So number one, I'll tee them up for you, and I'd love for you to comment. All debt is good debt until it becomes unmanageable.
That's true. All debt is good debt until you can't pay it anymore. So house, car, those are all good things. Even your student loan debt is a good thing because it helps you get an education, which helps you get ahead in life and helps you make more money. So it's the same thing with your home and other types of debt. Your car helps you get to work, your house, a place to live. But if everything is out of whack and it's too much for your income, that good debt then becomes bad debt.
Okay, what would you say to somebody on this point that says, well, yeah, Leslie, but what if it's a high interest debt? Is that still, I can afford it, but it's still high interest. Does that make it not good debt?
Not necessarily, okay. Because a high interest debt, it really will depend on the type of item. The interest rates are different depending on the type of debt that you have. Something high interest for a home, it would be 15% interest. But on a credit card, most people have 15% interest as their credit card rates. So it depends on the item that we're talking about in terms of the type of debt and the type
okay.
of interest.
Okay.
But the reality is that sometimes you can beat the interest rate system by making extra payments, by making larger payments, by making sure that that particular debt fits comfortably in your budget and in your expenses.
All right. Well, that's very clear. Okay, next one I want to ask you about is that number two, no, there is no shame in having financial trouble.
Nope, that's very true. We see so many people in all different kinds of situations, from professionals, attorneys, accountants, doctors, to teachers, police officers, union workers, disabled individuals, everybody across all of those different categories and more have debt-related issues, and there isn't any shame. And what happens is people feel that they are alone and they feel isolated when they have debt-related issues. They don't necessarily want to talk about it because there's an air of embarrassment associated, they believe, with the debt that they have and the inability for them to pay it. So we tell people there is no shame in having debt. Everybody has it. It's a question of how you manage it. And the best thing you could do for yourself is seek out some assistance to help you with that so you can get out of it.
Excellent. And on that point too, Leslie, I can say just from my own experience, I've had people come in and meet with me that listeners would be surprised to know that I've had people come in that make $250,000 a year and they have financial problems with, in large part, due to debt.
Yes, I have clients who make much more than that, very high net worth individuals. We've even represented people in the arts field and entertainment industry. People have debt. It just matters about the more income you have, the more debt that you have. So that is very true. Hmm. It's all how it's managed and how it's looked at.
Well, and that takes us right to number three. The majority of discretionary spending is non-essential.
Well, that's true. If you ask somebody what is it, something as a need versus a want. And truthfully, discretionary spending is really about what you want, not necessarily about what you need. But what you need and I need and somebody else needs can be very different things. Somebody might need cable, but somebody else might see that as discretionary. So other people might need vacation homes. Other people see that as discretionary. So we try to get people to see what discretionary really means and get a generalized definition of it. It's not something that you can't live without, and that really has to be defined based on the individual. So sometimes it takes some coaxing and sometimes it takes some eye-opening discussions about what really is a necessary and or discretionary expense in somebody's life.
Excellent, Leslie. I'm smiling. I wish you could see it. You can maybe popped out a big grin because I thought of a great question to ask you, and maybe you could share this. What is the most ridiculous or crazy thing that you've had somebody tell you that is a need that in their world is a need? Like I thought of an example of I have to have $50 a bottle of wine.
Well, I had somebody come see me, a couple who was in very severe debt, and one of the two partners in that relationship said that they couldn't live without a credit card from a particular intimate shop, like a lingerie type of store.
Yeah.
And I tried to explain that based on how I could save money for them in their budget, that there would be more than enough money to use cash to pay for those items that that particular person wanted. And they still said they absolutely 100% could not live without nor give up that particular credit card.
Wow.
So it was...
Okay.
It's certainly interesting. I mean, I could give you a lot of stories about
sure
what people
could
think are needs versus wants, but that certainly stands out in my mind.
That's a good one. And there's a joke there, but I'm not going to go anywhere near it. All right. So budgeting, number four, budgeting has only one rule. What's that one rule, Leslie?
Budgeting has one rule. You need to do it. And in reality, people are afraid of budgeting. It's almost a dirty word to a lot of people.
Right.
When I talk to my clients and I talk to them about budgeting, I could see the cringe look on their face. The eyes go down. Nobody really likes to budget, I found. And we don't force it on everybody. And we don't tell everybody you have to do it. But the key is to know what budget means to you. And what budget means to each individual is knowing what your income is, being able to tell me that what comes in each month to your home and what goes out. And so many people I meet with cannot tell me what their income and expenses are. And if you don't know what your income and expenses are, you need to be doing a budget. And it could be really simple.
You could do it literally on a napkin. I mean, we're not talking about building a spreadsheet that can turn the lights on and off. We're talking about basic things. And of course, speaking of lights, that's really what why budget is such a repulsive word for a lot of people, is it shines the light where they do not want to look.
Well, that's true. It does give you a reality check, but when you get into a situation where you're having difficulty meeting all of your expenses or you don't see your you don't see yourself getting any better. The balances aren't reducing. You're not increasing money into your savings or retirement funds. When you start to see those type of situations, you have to ask yourself, what's going on in my financial life that is preventing me and my accounts from getting better? And the first step really is to understand the budget. And budgeting is just like a checkup. You go to a doctor to make sure that everything's okay, and the doctor asks you questions about your health. Well, budgeting is really a financial health check and looking at what you're spending your money on. It is very difficult for most people, let's face it, to keep track of what goes on financially in your head. Everybody is so busy. There's a lot of expenses, especially when you have a family and a complicated lifestyle. It's difficult to remember everything that you're spending money on. So all you need to do is write it down. You don't need to have any special computer skills, advanced degrees, anything other than simply a pen, a piece of paper, and a calculator.
Yeah, well, you know what? Someday there'll be, technology is going to help us with this, Leslie. Someday there will be life and debt drones out there that follow you around and keep track of your spending. And of course, people will find a way to just deactivate those drones. I've got one more I want to ask you before we grab a quick break, and that is your credit score. Number five, your credit score is your passport to the things you need in life.
That's very true. But credit score is extremely important, and there's been a lot more hype lately about what credit score is, and more people are becoming aware of their credit score. Your credit score is very important if you need credit, because in order to determine whether you're credit worthy, the banks and other institutions lending money need to have a basis to lend you that money, and that's where the credit score comes in. So in order to have good credit, you have to manage your debt, because I see people who come to me with great credit scores, but at the end of the day, they don't have any money. There's not even $20 at the end of the month. So a great credit score doesn't necessarily do anything for you unless you manage your debt properly.
Outstanding. Very good. Leslie Tain, ladies and gentlemen, founder of Tain Law Group, attorney and debt therapist. I'm on the couch. She's talking to us about it, getting some good therapy. The book is Learn to Love Your Debt, Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness, lifeanddebtbook.com. Quick break, be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Whoa, we're back, and we are talking about life and debt. Yes, we are. lifeanddebtbook.com. Learn to Love Your Debt and Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness is the book. Leslie Tain is on the line with us, an attorney and debt therapist, and we are counting down the top 10 timely life and debt tips that Leslie had for us, and we've gotten through the top five. We're on to number six. Never use your 401k as an ATM. Save it.
Absolutely. We see so many people who come to us in my firm and my practice that have liquidated their 401ks and other types of retirements. And what we try to encourage, and one of the things that I wrote about in my book, is that your 401k in retirement is not meant as an ATM machine, so that when things get tough, the knee-jerk reaction is to take money from retirement. And it's difficult enough to put money away for retirement, and it's difficult enough for that retirement money to grow. So to constantly take it out doesn't make sense, because at some point you'll either have to pay it back or you'll end up with a tax consequence. So you'll make up things worse, because the reality is that you have to fix what the problem is. And the problem is generally cash flow. So if you start to borrow from the ATM machine, you've reduced your assets, and you haven't changed the problem, which is the cash flow piece of your situation. And the cash flow is going to be even tighter, because you're going to either have to pay that back or you're going to have to pay the IRS for taxes based on the withdrawal.
Well, and
so
if you make it,
make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. And here, let me give the financial planner's perspective. Leslie, if you take that money out, and let's say you've got 20 years before retirement, and say you take $10,000 out, it's not really costing you $10,000 to take it out. You're going to take it out, you're going to pay taxes and all that. And that's all obvious and on the surface. But If you take 10,000 out now, and let's say you would have earned an average of 7% for the next 20 years, really costing you 40,000 in lost accumulation value to get 10,000 today.
Yes, and the important piece of what you're saying is to put that on paper and show somebody what the loss is by doing something like that. But what happens is when you have debt and it's overwhelming, your mind is not thinking clearly. So people will often go to that because it's very easy to take the money out in most circumstances. So we like to catch people before they do something like that. So that's kind of a red flag that there's financial problems when somebody is going to start to dip into that.
Yeah.
But we could save that money by doing so many things that make more sense. It's just a matter of that person who has the debt problem having an open mind and knowing that the retirement money should not be touched.
Amen. Well, that brings us to number seven, which is really the solution to that, and that's stay in the black by not spending more than you have. That's a radical concept, Leslie.
It seems pretty basic in some circumstances, but the reality is you're right. It is radical. Don't spend more than you make. But if you don't know what you make, then you don't know what you can spend, and that comes back to the budgeting, sitting down and knowing what comes in each month and planning, because what money you need this month might be different for next month, and seasonally it might be different. Winter time comes and you might need more money for snow removal or oil or heating, and you might not have the same cash flow at different times and different seasons. And that might depend on your job, too. Perhaps you work more during different seasons. I have clients like that. So knowing what you can spend each month is important, and that has to be taken into account by looking at the totality of your yearly situation.
Very good, Leslie. Down here in Florida, we have to make special allowances during the summer for our suntan lotion budget. So it's brutal, but
you
it's
don't have snow removal problems.
No, we don't.
But
it's a life we chose.
Issues. We have lots of clients in Florida, so. Yeah. We know that there's other things to consider as well,
yeah.
Depending on where you live.
Exactly, and you've got to make a plan for that. And then I love number eight, the secret to managing your debt begins with your budget. I mean, that, again, you've got to have a plan for it, and that really is part of getting this process going, isn't it?
It sure is, and a plan is really important when it comes to spending and your money and building money. And that's why when people come to see you, there's a plan. There's a set way of managing money so it grows. When you're trying to manage debt and your day-to-day expenses and your lifestyle, there has to be a plan also. And that plan isn't just, well, I want to save money for a vacation or a bigger home. That plan is also about what the day-to-day spending is, how often you're going to go out for dinner, where you're going to spend your money. Does it make sense to buy something on a whim, or should you just wait? And also, what type of credit cards you take. That's part of planning, too. Does it make sense to have 2 cards, 5 cards, 4 cards? That is a plan that should happen ahead of time so that when you're standing at the register and you feel an impulse to either purchase or take out a credit card, you could say no because you know what the plan is and you could stick to it.
Well, I love that. And just to digress for a moment, I have to ask Leslie, you're at the counter, you're ready to pay, and then they say, and this will be with your blank, blank credit card, you know, in the store, the department store. And I'm like, no. Well, would you like to get one today? You'll get X percent savings. What do you think about those kind of offers?
I revert to the just say no concept.
Thank you.
Because that generally doesn't help you. First of all, there's so many repercussions to saying yes under those circumstances. They have to check your credit, number one. Number two, you're now taking out a credit card, so you have additional cards now in your basically in your arsenal, but on your credit report. And if you don't pay it off, there is a default interest rate. So while you might have a savings, unless that card is 0% interest and you plan to budget to pay it off before the time frame ends, you could end up getting jammed. And those store cards have very high interest rates, and they're higher than the savings on anything you purchase. So the reality is that if you take out that card, you can actually be paying more for your purchase at that time.
Excellent. That's what I was hoping you would say. Because I personally am like, no, and I'm not giving you my information. I'm not giving you my social. I'm not giving you any of that, but I'm glad you feel that way. Number 9 on the list, eliminating bad debt means finding the proper balance in your budget. You're back to that budget again, aren't you, Leslie?
The budget is the common denominator amongst most of these answers because it's really the key to financial success. Is understanding your budget. And again, it doesn't have to be overly complicated. it could be really simple. It also doesn't require something to do every day. You can revisit it monthly. You can revisit it quarterly, yearly. Once it's under control, I have clients who, after a few years of working out the debt-related issues and budgeting, they can do it in their heads. I can do it in my head now. So you might get to the point where you know right away whether you can afford something or not, just based on the day of the month, the time of the year. And in order to do that, you have to be in the know.
That's really it. And I've saved the best for last. My favorite one on your list, Leslie, is number 10, your life goals and finances must run on parallel tracks.
That's true. Listen, everybody has visions of grandeur in the sense that they want more. And that's understandable. And we live in a very material world where the car you drive is often important, the neighborhood you live in, the things you have, the clothes you wear. And it's a materialistic world, so it's very difficult because there is a lot of pressure. And as somebody who deals with people in debt every single day, I'm not immune to that. I understand. I live in the same communities that you live in, so I understand the difficulty in saying no. But you have to, in order to get to those places, in order to have more, you have to be aware, you have to budget, and you have to know what it is that you could spend your money on and have that overall plan.
Excellent. Well, plan. I love it. Leslie Tain, ladies and gentlemen. And the book is Learn to Love Your Debt. Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness. LifeandDebtBook.com. We'll grab a break and we'll come back and dig a little deeper into debt. I've got lots more to ask Leslie and get her expert opinion. And we will be right after this break.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Leslie Tain on the line with me, attorney and debt therapist. Thank God for Leslie. We need more people like her, and we're excited that she is multiplying the access to her sage advice, Learn to Love Your Debt, Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness. That is her book, and the website is lifeanddebtbook.com. And I'm really glad to have you with us, Leslie, because there's some more things I want to get to that I think our listeners would really appreciate. And one of the things you mentioned before the break was talking about the impact of opening up those department store credit cards and how they could affect your credit or hit your credit report. For those folks that are not as familiar, what about the credit report do you think is, I guess there's so many things here. Number one, can the credit report numbers do with the credit? Well, first, let's go with the credit score. Credit score, does the number change a lot? Are there things you can do to make it better? And then we can talk about the credit report itself.
Well, your score can change on a daily basis, and not everybody understands that that's true, because your score is really weighted based also, a factor of the scoring is based on other people's scoring. So it could change, and today might be one score, and tomorrow could be another score. Now, that doesn't mean it changes drastically, but you could impact it to make it change drastically. So by taking out more credit cards, by taking on more credit, by not paying bills on time, by allowing accounts to go to collection, that could impact your credit severely. But the store cards do impact your credit, and what ends up happening is if you say yes to every store you go into, and I have many, many clients who do, you'll end up with 20, 25 credit cards. And we, in my practice, commonly see people with that many credit cards. Most of them, they don't even realize they have or have balances on, because it's very difficult to manage that much credit.
Listen, I'm a financial planner, and I would not want to have to keep track of 20 credit cards.
So oh, that's a lot.
That's
no
insane.
Doubt.
Well, I get it. I get why people do it. It's but it can be, and it's not good for, I'm sure, for your score, and especially if you lose track and you start missing payments. Now, what about the credit report itself? That's access. Is that, well, first of all, can that be accessed without your permission, or do you have to sign off on every time somebody's going to access your report?
You have to give permission in order for somebody to check your credit. But once you take on a credit card, you're giving permission for them to check your credit. And that's a pretty common line in most credit-related agreements, from mortgages to even leases and even your insurance. You basically, by taking on the debt, you've given that company permission to check your credit whenever they need to or want to.
And even employers, and I'm sure you could speak to this as well, employers do credit checks.
Yes, they do. These days, it's much more common for people, for employers to be checking credit. Again, you need to be made aware that that's going to happen, but there is a risk involved in somebody who has very low credit or has a lot of debt. And it's those risks, again, it's not a general statement in the sense that that person with low credit or bad credit is a bad person. Most of the time, that's not the case, but there is a risk factor, and risks have to be weighed in terms of issuing licenses and employing people in certain sensitive jobs. And one way of looking at it is your credit, and that's why it's so important to manage it.
Excellent. Excellent, Leslie. I love it. It's very insightful. And I got time just another minute or so here to get into one final subject with you, and that is the subject of bankruptcy. Good idea, bad idea, last resort, or something that people should look at strategically?
The last two would be my suggestion.
Okay.
It is something to consider as a last resort, and bankruptcy is to be considered as a specific strategy under very certain circumstances, because bankruptcy as a last resort has much far-reaching effects than resolving your debt in a half a dozen other ways. It stays on your credit for 10 years. It could impact your insurance rates, ability to get mortgages, and rates in terms of additional credit. You also have a lot less flexibility with a bankruptcy than you do with other options. And sometimes people feel like they're in a position and there's no way out. But when you come to see somebody like myself, who's an expert who really is focused in on helping people see light through very difficult times, there are other ways out that will be less painful. You'll have more control. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't explore bankruptcy as a option. We often will tell people in our practice that they should talk to a bankruptcy attorney. Do your research. Find out if it makes sense for you. If it doesn't, then consider the other options that might be better for you. But that's not the only option out there, and it's not the only way to resolve debt.
Excellent. Leslie, well, we're out of time. Leslie Tain, ladies and gentlemen, Learn to Love Your Debt, Life and Debt, A Fresh Approach to Achieving Financial Wellness. That's the book, and the website is lifeanddebtbook.com. And, of course, the author is Leslie Tain, attorney and debt therapist. Leslie, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.